This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Welcome. This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast show with Andrea and Alice. Our community is made up of so many amazing and diverse groups of people, as are the programs on Joy 94.9. There is something there for everyone. A Little Pot of Joy is where we highlight just some of these amazing programs. We would like to show our respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, of elders past and present of the Kulin Nation, whose land we are broadcasting from. We're opening the evening with a podcast from As I Was Saying.
Lana speaks with Buck Angel, arguably the most famous trans fellow in the world, about identity, what we call ourselves, and the importance of context, the adult industry, how he likes that he's fetishized, and how he sees living to his authentic self as vitally important to his happiness.
So if you missed the show this week, the podcast is available for download from the Joy website, www.joy.org.au/as I was saying.
This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
We respectfully acknowledge the traditional custodians on which the Joy Studios stand. We pay our respects to the Wurundjeri, Boonwurrung, Tuggeranong, Jarjarawarrung, and the Wathaurong people of the Kulin Nation, and to their elders past and present. Welcome to As I Was Saying, produced at Joy 94.9 in Melbourne. My name is Lana Wolfe. In November 2014, Buck Angel was in Australia and I saw him speak at the Trans Body Politic Forum in Melbourne. From this forum, due to having mutual friends, we went out to dinner together, started talking, and agreed to meet the next day in a typical loud Melbourne coffee shop to record an interview. Buck Angel was assigned female at birth and conquered a lifetime of adversity to undergo his transformation and become a happy, healthy, self-confident man he is today. Buck created the first female-to-male adult website in 2003 and became the first female-to-male adult entertainer and film producer. In 2007, Buck made history again as the first transsexual man to ever win an AVN Transsexual Performer of the Year Award, the Academy Awards of the adult industry. This is our interview.
Well, political, I guess, can mean a lot of things, and actually I never thought about even my work being political. But political to me is conversation and dialogue. And so my body creates that. My body creates a discussion around male and female identities, sexuality identities, because I put myself out there as a man with a vagina. And that is not anything that anyone has ever really talked about or seen. So to me, that's political.
So researching how you've interacted with and participated in the broader queer community, it appears that internationally you're more embraced by gay men than by trans persons. Interestingly enough, your fans are mostly made up of gay men, and your adult film co-stars are often gay men. You know, what's behind this?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite fascinating. When I started my work, it was all gay men who accepted me and not the trans male community. The trans male community does accept me now, but that said, there's a lot of turmoil within the trans community, and I think what happens is there's a lot of ego involved, and everyone wants to be the leader, and everyone wants to be... And that clearly happens with a new movement, I think. I'm not the voice of anything other than my own voice, and because I have a little bit more notoriety, I hope to be able to let other people speak through me and then in that way give other voices an opportunity. So I think that the reason why gay men tended to accept me maybe because it's an older movement and they feel a little bit more grounded around a lot of stuff and they don't feel threatened by me or feel like I'm this voice up, and they were sexually attracted to me. I was a new kind of man. A new kind of man that they were like, wow, that's male and I'm attracted to that, but that person, you know, doesn't have the same genitals that I've always thought it was all about. So I opened, in a sense, a new form of sexuality And so they were attracted to that because gay men are attracted to masculinity. Clearly, that's what they were attracted to.
Regarding his participation in adult films such as Man with a Pussy, I asked Buck if he has a set idea of how he wants people to view him.
You know, I did the Man with a Pussy thing 12 years ago when I started, and I did it specifically because within the adult industry, you have to have a sort of niche, and you have to have a sort of thing to sell. And I did fetishize myself that way, clearly, specifically for the adult industry, not knowing what I was going to be today. There's no way that I knew I was going to be sitting here with you in Australia and having this conversation. No way. So that said, I think that it was to get people to be aware of the fact that I'm a man who has a vagina, and that I exist, and that other people like me exist, and that we are part of. And I would, because we always, because for myself, it was always like, ooh, you can't be that. Ooh, you have to have a penis. Ooh, you'll never be a man. I was getting that from my own community too. And so I realized, you know what, that's not true. So the adult thing was a way for me to sort of feel good about myself and to reclaim my own body and to put it out there and to get other people to reclaim their own. It worked. There's people calling themselves man with a vagina, man with a pussy now. There's other guys like me. There's like a whole movement of guys like me who say, I'm a man with a vagina, I'm a man with a pussy. Wow.
One of the things I really wanted to ask Buck was, how do you do sex-positive trans porn while minimalising the possibility of the aesthetic being turned back on the trans community by viewers interpreting it as a spectacle and as playing into the fetishising of trans persons' bodies? This is how he replied.
Of course, you don't think I get that already, that you're fetishizing trans people? I think fetishizing is a positive thing. I like that people fetishize me because I don't, that's why. Because they're just saying fetishizing is a negative thing. It is not. What about the people that don't feel that way?
Yeah,
you're right.
What about people that put that fetishization on you just because of the content there?
Then that's fine. That's exactly what I do. But I'm not fetishizing anybody else but myself. Where does it say trans people? It says Buck Angel, the man with the pussy. People are missing that point. It never says trans man. Now my sexing the trans man, XXX. But I give a voice to each. It's docu-porn. It is not about me. I put a camera on you and you speak and you perform. Because you are doing it. I don't tell you how to I don't tell you what to say. I ask you a question, and I don't tell you what to do within the context of the sexual scene. And everybody who signs up to be part of my Sexy and Trans Man clearly has their own idea of what they want to do that. So you're fetishizing yourself in a sense that you're okay with other people fetishizing you. That's the way I look at it, as an empowerment tool. I'm all about empowerment. I'm not about, and I personally don't think fetishizing is a bad thing. I mean, you can look at it both ways. It just depends on how you look at, it's like words, reclaiming words. You can say reclaiming this word is not a good thing, or you could say you're never going to make the world, everybody on the same plane. It's just not possible. All I know is, I know what I'm doing, and I know the people that like what I do, and that clearly is a lot of people. So I don't think that anything I do is a bad. You're always going to find the naysayer. It's just how it is.
You're on Joy 94.9, and this is A Little Pot of Joy with Andrea and Alice. From Critical Hit, which just celebrated its very first birthday, crossovers.
The team talk about crossovers. Not just the obvious stuff like movies, but how about when TV shows get made into video games? What about certain recording artists who have awkwardly starred in video games?
We get taken through some of the most popular and most weird examples. And if you just can't listen to the show live, download the podcast from the Joy website, joy.org.au, or the iTunes store.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Yes, you are on Critical Hit here on a Saturday afternoon. We're doing a show today about crossovers, talking about video games that are based on other forms of pop culture. So we've done movies before, so we're not sort of talking about Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. Talking more about your TV shows that become video games.
Celebrities that suddenly come out with video games. Well, yeah, I mean, you look at video games nowadays and pretty much everything has a video game related to it.
Yes.
Most of the time.
Look, to me, Buffy the games on Xbox were, to this day, some of the most effective crossovers from a TV show in history. So... during the break, there are a couple of Harry Potter geeks getting very, very excited for reasons I don't understand.
Me just wearing Slytherin. Some kind of Harry Potter
I have my
outfit.
Slytherin hoodie on, yes.
Okay. So now what game are you talking about that you want remade?
Okay, so they made a Harry Potter game, Quidditch World Cup, and it was amazing. Like, you got to play as the whole Quidditch team. Like, you started off at Hogwarts and you picked your Hogwarts house and then you won the house cup. And then you could go on to one of the international Quidditch teams and you played all around the world. So they had different Quidditch pitches for all different countries, including Australia, by the way. It was awesome.
Okay.
And then, yeah, you just got to play Quidditch, and it was... they did it so well, and it was amazing.
Memories.
I thoroughly enjoyed
Nerd.
It.
Yes, yes. So was it basically like...
it worked
FIFA,
so well,
the Quidditch?
Though.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yes.
But, like, it wasn't...
I hate FIFA.
It worked so well. Like, usually when games come out, like, little spin-off games and things, they're usually pretty broken, and they're like, how can we make money off this? And they just rush it out.
Yeah.
But it was such a good game.
Yeah, the mechanics were really well done, yeah. And I...
is Quidditch kind of like Blitzball from Final Fantasy X?
Kind of. Just in the air and
in
not underwater.
In a way.
Yeah.
Except you're flying on broomsticks.
I just want a remake, and I want it to be an international e-sport. Like, I need this in my life. I need every team to have their own Quidditch robes, and you see them on TV, and like everyone's got a following. It's just, yeah, that'd be so amazing.
So, talking about gaming fantasies for a second, if we can just stray off topic slightly, I always thought the best crossover in history. I'm a wrestling fan, right? So,
what?
I always wanted, when I was a kid, I still think it would be really cool today, is a game where it's like GTA kind of thing. So you're in an open world in like a city, but you play as like The Rock and you just walk around like punching people and giving them wrestling moves on cars and like doing the people's elbow on people. And you can change to like different characters and do wrestling moves in the street and do like a GTA crossover with wrestling.
Is that not GTA?
Well, not really. No,
is there any psychologists listening to the show? Because I think we need a psychologist.
And you're like, Randy Orton comes in, it's like, okay, yeah, out of nowhere. And it's just, and you know.
I think we need
also,
a psychologist.
Are we just going to gloss over the fact that you have no idea how Quidditch is played? Because even if you don't like Harry Potter, that's like too
well,
far.
Well, if he hasn't watched any of them,
no,
then...
no, it's broomsticks and a ball, right?
How do you not know what Quidditch is?
It's broomsticks and a ball, right? I just told you what it is.
Move on from Quidditch.
It's broomsticks and three different types of balls.
Yeah.
What?
Golden snitch?
Yeah, you like balls, don't you, Luke?
Four balls.
That sounds like some
there's
sort of porno.
Balls.
I don't know what's going on. What is
there's
golden
a quaffle,
snitch?
There's two bludgers and a snitch.
The golden snitch is not as bad as you think.
I've been to parties called Golden Snitch before.
Moving right along.
I want to move on.
To probably the best game of all time, 50 Cent, Blood in the Sand.
Yes, and 50 Cent Bulletproof as well, so there's to relax. There's been two 50 Cent games that have been released.
No.
Action
amazing.
Games.
Hasn't there been a lot more
I'm
than
just
that?
Really surprised that 50 Cent has his own video games.
Look,
but I think it's amazing.
You're going to play it now. You're going to seek it out, aren't you?
Yes.
So, look, you know, musicians being involved in games has been around for a very long time. One of the earliest ones is one of my favourite games as a child, Michael Jackson's Moonwalker. On the Sega Master System.
And
why are you making that face at me,
it was
Mix?
An arcade one as well. Drake keeps appearing on stage at Ubisoft E3 shows. I'm still not sure why.
I hope they have a game of Drake and it's just him crying for like
a whole
70 hours of gameplay.
He's just on stage every so often. I have no idea why.
And then you kill him for no reason.
Isn't helpful.
You just kill him for no reason. So we can call it Hatred of Drake. It'd be great. But Michael Jackson's Moonwalker was a fantastic game and much loved by many who have played it. Basically, you run around as Michael Jackson wearing the white suit with the white hat and everything, and there's all thugs everywhere, and you throw your hat and it works like a bit of a decapitating type mechanism. So you throw your hat to kill people, and then if you build up your special, right, the whole screen goes black, but there's a spotlight on Michael, and he stops and like dances and he goes, oh, and like does all this stuff, and then he ends it and everyone on the screen just dies instantly.
It was the ultimate move.
It was like a fatality, but with Michael Jackson dancing you to death. It was a truly amazing, amazing game.
I had an arcade
Master
machine
system.
With it on it.
There it is. There it is. Look, Kev. Yeah, it was arcade as well, yeah. It was just so cool. And as a Michael Jackson fan as a kid, that was when he was in, like, his peak, right? Like, early 90s, late 80s, you know, when it was, like, he was touring and it was massive, yeah? And it was just an amazing game and it was such a cool crossover. And it's reflected on quite fondly by many people.
I think we must have a bit of a generational gap here.
It's not really. I have heard of it, but, yeah and I have heard. I was going to say, we're pretty much very similar ages. Yeah.
And part of the issue is that not many people had a Sega Master System as well. Exactly. So, I mean, that's where it gets awkward. But also...
it's also on PlayStation 2? No, Sega Mega Drive.
I was going to say PS2? What?
Yeah, right.
That would be ridiculous. No. Also, now, Kev, we mentioned it before briefly, but High School Musicals had a couple of games as well.
Yes, they have. They had a game on the 3DS, which was really weird. But they had their High School Musical Sing It, which was basically High School Musical Sing Star, but it was terrible because there was no scoring system in it, so it just was pointless. But, you know, it was still fun because you were just singing along to the music you know and love.
That's called
karaoke, Kev. It's essentially what it was. It was essentially a karaoke game.
With a very creepy, lifeless-looking Zac Efron.
Yes. But there's a few High School Musical games out there, and, you know, a lot of these Disney things. Because kids love them.
Because money.
Because money.
Yeah. Because parents buying things. Now, and also Britney's Dance Beat, which you'd mentioned before briefly. But, I mean, this is a game that entirely Britney did all the motion capture choreography for as well. And so they actually didn't just have the video clips of Britney. You actually had this sort of decent-looking 3D version of Britney Spears with all her dancers doing the dance routines for the game as you played along with the songs. And it was like you press the buttons to try and match up, like a Dance Dance Revolution type thing, but a little bit different.
She looks good in that game.
She looks kind of terrifying.
She looks,
like
Google it. Britney's Dance Beat. Just Google it. Britney looks amazing.
Think, given this was an early PS2 game, I think it doesn't look that bad.
She looks like she's going to devour my soul.
Yeah. Well, she might with dancing. That's how she does it.
That's why she looks so young.
But look, I actually liked the game, though. That sounds bad, but it was a different sort of rhythm-based action game, music game. And
was it a rhythm game based on using the controller to press buttons?
Yes.
So it's Simon Says.
Kind of. No, it's like when you play Dance Dance Revolution without a dance mat. You use the controller instead.
Yeah, I didn't do that. I used a dance mat.
Well, not everyone was rich like you, Archer. Some of us couldn't afford a dance mat.
Psychologist. We need that psychologist.
I'm joking. I had a dance mat. I had the full Rock Band kit. It's all good. It's a couple of other celebrities to feature in strange gaming crossovers. One that comes to mind is Shaq Fu. A kung fu fighting game based on Shaquille O'Neal.
So amazing.
Which is just
that
not...
sounds horrible.
It's not something that you want in your life.
I played it at copies. Work like 3 days ago.
What?
Yeah, because like you can
What do you do for a job? What's wrong with you?
You know what I do for a job.
Yeah, call centre. Like,
yeah, that's what's wrong with
How
me.
How does that come up at work?
I was bored, so I'm like...
See, play Shaq Fu.
I was just like, play old Super Nintendo games, and Shaq Fu came up. I'm like, what? So, yeah, it's not good.
That's your choice of Super Nintendo game to play with
I
your
saw
board?
It. I'm like, that's hilarious. So, yeah,
it's pretty awful.
Tell me that's not the best cover for a game ever, though. That Shaq Fu one.
Like, Shaq Fu is pretty amazing.
Well, Shaquille O'Neal doing kung fu moves with his hands is always impressive. Enforcer of justice. Shut up. also, another one, the Playboy Mansion, which came out on PlayStation 2 about 10 years ago now, featured the Hef himself. Hugh Hefner was in the game along with all his bunnies.
That sounds like the most sexist game I've ever heard of in my life.
It's a simulation game.
It was like The Sims.
That's even worse.
But in the Playboy Mansion.
Yeah, I stand by it.
I think you're a photographer. And
no, you are actually Hugh Hefner.
Oh, you play as Hugh Hefner.
Yeah.
And you build your famed Playboy empire from scratch, starting from a humble magazine to celebrity endorsements to home entertainment to internet websites. Sounds like the Kim Kardashian
Who
game,
made
actually.
It?
Developed by Cyberlore Studios and published by Ubisoft.
Thanks, Ubisoft.
In Australia.
Oh, wow.
2005. It was a business simulator, apparently.
What?
Business simulator. This has been Critical Hit on Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9, and this is A Little Pot of Joy with Alice and Andrea. Up next from her voice, same-sex parenting.
We hear from Fiona from Prospective Lesbian Parents Victoria about the options and support that are available for same-sex attracted women who would like to start families.
Well, there's an awful lot of opposition to same-sex families, and I don't quite understand it. I mean, why should it be any different to having kids, whether you're same-sex or one male, one female?
That's true. It's not clear, I don't think, that there's any benefit to having different genders of, you know, parental role model, because you certainly still get those influences from society anyway.
But the other thing, if you look at it, what about with single parents? How do they provide the other half?
Well, exactly. Although, you know, we also have to say that society and politicians can really frown on single parents as well.
But they accept it.
True, as they should.
And at the end of the day, parenting, if you're going to go through all this trouble of becoming pregnant and carrying a child 9 months, you're going to really care about that child. And having two loving parents is more important than having a relationship that's chaos.
Absolutely.
So it seems very, very slanted.
Definitely. I think that I know lots of people who would make fantastic parents. So I hope that there's more acceptance and there's some great options and support available, clearly.
If you can't listen to the show live, download the podcast from the Joy website, www.joy.org.au, or the iTunes Store.
This is A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
And we're joined tonight by Fiona, who runs the Prospective Lesbian Parents Victoria group with her partner. And they also have a young son who I think is 16, 17 weeks now. So, Fiona, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome.
Can you just tell us a little bit about your background and the work that PLP does?
Sure. Basically, I've been involved with facilitating PLP. This is my third year now. And PLP has been running since about 2004, I believe. So it's been a fairly long-standing support group. We run monthly meetings where same-sex attracted women, whether they be singles, couples, can come along and in a safe, confidential environment talk about issues relating to conception, preconception, and issues, you know, post-birth and things like that.
Now, how's life for you at the moment? You are a new mum. How's that going for yourself?
Challenging. Very challenging. It's wonderful. But, look, nobody prepares you for parenthood, I don't think. There's so many different challenges. I mean, everyone talks about the sleep deprivation. I think I'm coping pretty well. I think when you're breastfeeding that you get all those happy hormones. My poor partner Kate.
Stick them on the boob and fall asleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been there, done that.
Yeah.
My poor partner Kate, I think she suffers a little bit more with the sleep deprivation than I do. But then I always could fall asleep fairly well beforehand, let alone being exhausted. So, and I'm back at work. I'm self-employed as well. So, you know, there's the challenges of working and looking after him. And so... But, yeah, it's you, one look at that face, one look at that big toothless cheesy grin and you just melt and you go, yeah, it's so worth
it. I love that toothless cheesy grin. I don't think I've ever heard anybody describe their child like that, but I'm loving it and I'm going to use it. I'm definitely going to use that one.
Yeah.
What sort of, in terms of the process that you and your partner went through, what sort of challenges did you face?
We had an interesting journey to becoming pregnant and conceiving Henry. We initially started out with a known donor. That was kind of a fortuitous by chance meeting a colleague when I was working, suggested that her heterosexual partner could, you know, donate.
Oh my God,
for
that's
us.
So nice.
It was just one of those random coincidentals. It never happens, you know.
Yeah.
Pot of gold at the end of the rainbow kind of things. And so we were quite excited. So we thought, great, we'll go down that road. And unfortunately, we had 4 tries and 2 miscarriages.
Okay.
And then we actually happened to meet his mother at a Thermomix party, as you do. Mm-hmm. Just a random thing.
The Thermomix party.
And although she was lovely, she was very much all about... her son was God's gift to the planet and he was just it in a bit, and so were her grandchildren. And the law, the way that it is when you have a known donor, anyone who has a vested interest in the child can apply to the family courts for access.
Ooh.
And that kind of did scare us a little bit. And so then we considered then going the anonymous donor route.
Yep.
And we sort of thought, you know, obviously things happen for a reason, you know, our journey wasn't meant to go down that road. So then we weighed up the pros and cons of going through a local clinic in Melbourne versus an interstate clinic. And for personal reasons, we weighed up, you know, what our options were. So Kate and I decided to go through Queensland Fertility Group. And that was a bit of a journey in itself. So we started that process in August and it was like an unfortunate series of events. You know, part and parcel was, you know, me having a Looney Tunes style fall in my kitchen, fracturing my bum bone.
Well, hang on, was this before the insemination?
This was before the insemination. So, like, trying to lead up to this process.
And you're
like,
preparing yourself.
Exactly. So, like, that was kind of a story in itself. So, yeah, so I fractured my coccyx. So we needed to give time for that to heal because when you're pregnant, that's an injury you don't want.
Definitely.
So then eventually, you know, then the gynecologist had a month off on holidays and then anyway, long story short, we eventually got back up to Queensland to try and we got pregnant first go at IUI.
Fantastic.
Which is in utero insemination. So for us, it was a really, really long time for something that happened in the end quite quickly.
So just to explain to some of the listeners who might not fully understand the process of IUI, so it's intrauterine insemination.
That's right.
So we, like, a lot of people kind of technically know it as turkey basting, but it's a bit of a step further than turkey basting, isn't it?
Locally known as turkey basting.
But turkey basting is the kind of first effort, isn't it, where you literally get a turkey baster.
You can use a turkey baster, but there's much more efficient methods.
Oh, yeah, like getting it right up there, like through the cervix.
You don't want to get it through your cervix. So that's actually a common misnomer. So with IUI, you actually do get it through the cervix. So it's done with washed semen.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah, lovely. Sorry, talking about
num-num.
Warning, sort of should have had a warning there. We're going to be talking gross, icky bits right now. IUI is done with washed semen.
Yep.
So it can be put through the cervix into the uterus.
Yep.
And then basically it gives the sperm a head start.
A better chance of getting
there. Yeah. So
plus the washed sperm, like, and just for those of you who don't know what that really means, when
the
process of washing sperm is they basically get rid of all the two-headed ones, the two-tailed ones, the ones that are running around in circles, and they get the strong ones, don't they?
They put it in a centrifuge, so, and they actually separate the semen from the sperm.
Lovely.
And they put it into a different medium, and you get a little vial or a straw or whatever your clinic decides to call it, and they use a really weird looking syringe, and you know, it's
in
very
it goes.
Romantic and
very romantic.
But it's all very quick, very painless. So 5 minutes and, oh, right, we're done. Good-o.
So the candles are on.
Absolutely.
Your girlfriend's beside you giving you a little smooch while the doctor's having a go.
Our fertility specialist, she was great. She was really, really good. So I think she might be one of the girls as well. So.
Yeah.
So Fiona, I want to know, of course, a little bit more about what PLP does, and tell us a little bit about what types of resources and support you give to people.
Sure. So we run, like I said before, we run monthly meetings, which is held on the third Tuesday of every month, and we cover a range of topics. So we kind of alternate between guest speakers and sessions that I run. So we have a lawyer usually come as a guest speaker. We have births, deaths and marriages. We also have one of the fertility clinics come and speak as well. That's always a really popular session. Some of the sessions that I run is a do-it-yourself to home insemination, which is always fun and lots of gory details.
We talked a lot about that before the show a little bit and
brilliant.
Had a few giggles.
Brilliant gory details.
And Louise is very keen on this. Yeah. I think she'll be coming along to the next one.
I sound like a spot squeezer, I'm not. But the gory details about like surrounding fertility are actually really interesting.
Well, that's the thing that often people want to know about. That's the stuff that you quite often can't find information on. It's literally the logistics, like how, what do you use? Like what's going to give you a bit, like there's no guarantees, but what's going to give you perhaps an easier or better result, or what's going to be less fiddly and icky, because
what do you need to do in advance as well, because you need to time it really well.
But so many women don't know about their cycles.
No,
they don't know that, you know, things happen in patterns. They don't know about ovulation. Like knowing when to inseminate is just as important as how to inseminate.
Yeah.
So, you know, we go through all those sorts of topics as well.
And the thing is as well, like, it's such a beautiful process, like the monthly cycle. If you actually dig into it and research it, it's amazing and it's so predictable as
Absolutely.
And, you know, that this is why women are all crazy.
Yes.
Because our hormones, honestly, they just go nuts every month.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, you're crazy. You're crazy, Barbara. You just don't want to say it. But no, it's true, though, and we are totally defined by our hormones and our monthly cycle, and it is quite a wonderful thing when you do a bit of research.
Absolutely. Oh, look, I'm a big fan of the mucus.
That's good old cervical mucus.
Absolutely. You know, get in touch with your inner mucus, I always say.
So yeah, with them. So PLP. So what kind of people do you get showing up? Is it all same sex attracted people, or do some heterosexual people show up as well?
Sometimes we get donors, but we kind of ask people to let us know when they're bringing donors, because you know we like it to be an environment where people feel like they can share and ask questions. Mm-hmm. So there's certain sessions where it's absolutely appropriate to bring donors, like. For example, this month's session, we're inviting support people. So it's an opportunity to perhaps bring grandparents, parents, donors, people that are in your support network that want to ask questions, are a little bit afraid to either ask because they don't want to get that graphic with, you know, or they're asking inappropriate questions and you just want to bring them along so someone else can answer them for you.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do that sort of stuff.
Which is kind of good because it's inclusive, right? It's
absolutely. Not, yeah. Absolutely. No, we're not exclusive at all. So,
And I think that group of people is quite an important one for somebody who like starts this journey.
Yes.
And, because, yeah, as you're sort of crossing that a little bit, that, yeah, for some people it might work straight away. For other people it might not.
Yeah.
Some people try for years.
Yeah.
I can imagine it's quite difficult to decide who you talk to in that phase.
Absolutely.
Or not, because you don't – or I know from people that when they tell you they're pregnant, that's usually – a while in, you know, because you never know what happens, might go wrong, so you don't tell the world straight away. So
I think too, you know, there's always that I know Kate and I had that issue of being so excited that you're trying to make a baby and wanting to tell people, and we did tell some people early on, and then when we went through the process of having two miscarriages, it's heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everyone, like, you read the blogs and all that sort of stuff, and everyone says, you know, don't tell people until you've passed that safe mark, and until you actually go through that process, I think, of having a miscarriage, you don't actually acutely realise how much that can affect you. Mm. You know, but then again, depending on your support network, some people can then rally around you.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword,
it is
really,
a double-edged sword.
Isn't it?
It really does depend on your support network, I think.
Because if you don't tell anybody, you have to kind of suffer it yourself and your partner, so you don't have any support them.
It depends on your support group,
because
you know, if you've got some friends of going, so you're pregnant yet, hey, not helpful. But then, you know, you've got other people that just are there, and I think they're the kind of support people that you need, that wait for you to open up and to invite you in and to talk about those issues that are meaningful to you, and to just be there.
And of course, heterosexual couples go through this as well.
Absolutely.
Who goes through IVF.
Absolutely.
So it's pretty much the same thing for those guys too.
Yeah.
Do you find that women who are in same-sex relationships, are you less likely to have within your, you know, sort of friendship groups, people who've, you know, shared these similar experiences? Like, I know, most of my gay friends, for example, don't have babies, haven't started families, versus all of my straight, well, not all of them, but a lot of my, all the straight friends that I grew up with, now we're like in our mid-30s, they all have kids. So it's kind of a different, like, you find yourself often, I think, in a totally different social sort of context in terms of that support.
Absolutely. I think I've definitely found that. I mean, even with new mums groups, I haven't really clicked with the new mums groups that's in our area. And I've sort of found that, not that any of them said anything nasty or anything like that. You know, sometimes you just feel a welcoming vibe and sometimes you don't. And, you know, with the new mums group in our area, I definitely haven't felt that connection, that ability to identify with that group.
So are you the only same-sex mum?
Yeah, in that area I am, yeah.
You know what, maybe it's just a little bit about, and I know we shouldn't have to educate, but maybe it is just a bit about that, you know, and it's about familiarity as well.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe it'll just take a bit of time and perseverance.
Oh, potentially. I mean, doing PLP, I love having that. People are sort of pretty much all on that same page. They're either going through the process, or they're thinking about going through the process. They're there for information, or, you know, so you're surrounded by people that understand, as opposed to, you know, a group of mums sitting around whinging about how little their husbands do. Well, you know, I don't have that. I have a wonderful partner who does amazing things, and, you know, hell yes, two mums are better than one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. You don't even have to ask, which is awesome, you know. Like, you can just give a look and it's like, hey, no, I'll cook dinner.
Hang on. That's not even about kids. That's like housework as well.
Absolutely.
Having a female partner is brilliant. You just don't have to ask.
That's it.
It's just done.
There's no toilet seat left up. It's great.
Yeah. The advantages of having a girlfriend, everybody.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, and this is A Little Pot of Joy with Andrea and Alice. Up next from the woods, piercing nightmares.
Mark, Matt and Dean are joined by Mistress Bella and partner Paulus to bring up the piercing and its effects.
In particular, we get a brief history of the Prince Albert and the reverse Prince Albert, sailing into Sammy's Day, and Matt's live piercing.
You can listen to the entire podcast by downloading it from the Joy website, www.joy.org.au/thewoods, or download it for free from the iTunes store.
You're listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program.
Grr. This is Big Bear Mark, and tonight in the studio, I am joined by both Matt and Dean. Now, you two are just a little bit freaked out at the moment, aren't you?
Just on the edge of my seat.
Just on the edge of your seat. That's because we have got the absolutely lovely Mistress Bella in the studio with us. Hello, Bella. How are you going?
Not bad, Mark. And yourself?
I'm good. I'm very, very good. And we've also got Bella's lovely husband, Paulus, in the studio as well. Hey, Paulus.
Oh, yeah. How are you going?
Good. Basically, tonight we're going to be talking about piercing. And all the things associated or around body modification as well.
I'm scared.
You're scared. I'm not scared. I've seen all this all before.
Don't worry, boys. Consent really matters.
Now, Bella, you've been in the industry a long time for the body modification industry.
Come on, Mark. This is radio. No one can see all my wrinkles.
You have no wrinkles. What are you talking about?
Oh, I love you. I love you.
But you were saying that you've been in the industry about 21 years, is it?
25.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And you're obviously in it for the love of it as well.
I do. Absolutely love it. I love the joy and the pleasure that it brings to people, and whether that is purely from an aesthetic viewpoint, you know, something that's visible on their face, or whether it's something that only those special few get to enjoy.
Are reasons people go...
Because we specialise in genital piercing and nipple piercing, obviously our focus is primarily on the sensation side of things. Mm. We do all safe piercings, but that's the stuff that we really enjoy too. You know, we get rewarded nicely with that. You know, huge bags of chocolate and all sorts of things people bring in to say thank you.
It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, thank you.
You've improved my life.
You. Yeah, well, it used to take me hours now and it takes me minutes, which is fun, you know, particularly for women.
Okay.
So, I mean, men, it usually just takes minutes anyway, but, you know, for women.
Yeah. And so are you finding, over the 25 years, has your demographic changed? Do you see more women getting piercings and body modifications, or has it always been sort of the same mix?
Look, you know, it all started with gay men.
Yeah.
You know, so that was always going to be the lion's share of the clientele, and largely still is. You know, for us, it still is, because we support, you know, the gay community, and we love the gay community. So we do, and we specialise in, you know, genital, which is what it's really all about, you know, genital. Well, the stock standard, how do you say it, quadrella, you know, a PA, a pair of nipples and a septum piercing, you know, the gay
That's the full four. Set.
Yeah, that's the full set, and that set has been traditional for a long time.
And a lot more gauche.
And a lot more geisha now too. Now that the magic of that has been.
Mean.
Yes. Go on, Dean. What you've got? You must have a question.
Oh, so can, let's.
Where do you start?
So look, let's start with the Prince Albert. I think people. Well,
that's the big kahuna.
That's the big kahuna. So the Prince Albert. Please explain.
Here you go. I've been told we're doing lots of talking.
The Prince Albert. Depending on what theory you prescribe to as to why it got its name.
Mm-hmm.
Goes back to obviously Prince Albert, that he supposedly put a ring in to hide his member when it was unfashionable, when they used to wear skin tight pants, and it was unfashionable to show his bulge and would tie it back between his legs.
And the other story was that Queen Victoria put it in so she didn't have to put her fingers on his cock.
So if you want it, then you better put a ring on it.
Yeah.
Well, there something is like that. That. Yeah, there is if that. You like it, put a ring on it. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
A reverse Prince Albert then?
That can't. Okay, so the PA, they both involve the urethra. Mm-hmm. All right, so the Prince Albert goes, we've got one hole built in, which is the urethra, and the Prince Albert then traditionally comes out on the underside of the head, between that little V.
Matt, just breathe, Matt. Matt.
He's fine.
There's lots of squirming going on in the studio tonight. And then the reverse PA is, you know, body piercer language is not that complicated. The reverse PA goes the opposite way. So it comes out through the top of the head instead of the bottom. So the reverse PA goes through a lot more tissue.
And sensation-wise, they're for both parties. And whether that's male-male, male-female, both parties get a good sensation from it.
Unless you have fillings, and that's another story.
That's dental, and you have a good dental plan.
Yes.
With the guys who get this done, obviously it is a sensitive area for a fella. How do you deal with patients or clients who are squirmish, let's say?
We talk to them, reassure them, and I don't believe there's anybody that we haven't got through yet.
Mm. Has anybody ever fainted or...?
They're laying down, so what does it matter?
Good point.
No, I mean, Matt, ever is a long word. A long time. Yeah. Very, very few, you know, and most people, male or female, but usually guys, you know, oh my God, is that it? You know, it's like done. I've just built it up so much in my head.
I've had my eyebrows done 3 times.
Okay.
And
you had your eyebrows pierced or
what?
Yeah,
3 times.
Okay.
And each time it grew out within a year.
Right.
Does the same happen to the penis? Does it?
Not usually, no. No, okay. No, rejection is still a risk, you know, whenever we put something into the body that's not meant to be there, which is where the quality of the jewellery does play a very significant role.
Well, I'm very cheap, so...
Well, then you get what you pay for, don't you, Matt?
That's it. That's exactly right.
You got your money's worth in that it was temporary. You only pay per day. So if it was cheap, you know, that's fine.
Now, one of the other ones that has intrigued me, I won't say I'm curious, I'm more intrigued. Now, they say that real men don't eat quiche. But apparently real men do go to the quiche.
Yeah,
now,
but they will stimulate a prostate, though.
So how do we explain this one? This one goes...
So it's between the ball sack and the anus? And
that's how we explain
it's
it.
A bar. It's a bar that goes
through.
Oh, okay.
Or a ring.
Okay.
Right. And you do this because...
Well, if you position it right, it should sit just over the top of the prostate.
Okay.
Which then can add stimulation during ejaculation or just general playing. Whether it's a ring and somebody can pull on it, or you can hang a weight on it, or you can have the bar for somebody to press on it. And if they press on it all at the right time, it's...
Great
things happen.
Kind of an X marks the spot.
Yeah, it's like, just press there. Because it's... Am I right saying it's the perineum, isn't it?
Yes.
The area that's stimulated. Yeah.
If you go with the ring, can you then change to a barbell? Or does
mm-hmm.
it?
Yes.
Oh, so they are adjustable. Mm-hmm.
Interchangeable.
How do you deal with cleanliness in that area where it's generally, you know, more humid and sweaty most
Did your mummy not teach you to wipe from the front to the back?
Well, considering our listeners are mostly bears, so...
Sure, but, hairy, you know, you still men. Wipe from the front to the back,
I'm
yeah?
not talking about that.
Just normal sweat.
Like
just normal, normal shower.
Normal hygiene rules apply.
Don't talk to him.
Oh, well. Yeah. Yeah, just normal, everyday showering and hygiene rules apply. Okay. And that takes care of the majority, all of it, really.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, because your sweat's fine for you. You know, it's only when it stays there too long.
Yeah, you just wash the taint away.
Yeah. You know, a day or two's fine, but much more than that, then you could have a problem.
Yeah, there's no big issue, though.
No.
Okay.
No.
So in terms of safety and when you are piercing, I mean, obviously you do take a lot of care. And, you know, and what you said before is you pay for what you get.
Mm.
And quite frankly, you've got to... I mean, when you're dealing with these sorts of areas, you can't... Stuff it
you
up.
You only get one.
You only get one shot. So you want someone who knows what they're doing.
I would think.
Yeah.
People tend to put a lot more research into finding their genital pierces than they do into, you know, the person saying who does their eyebrow. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Now,
it's prime real estate.
Yeah, exactly. You
know? Well, we've come to the end of another wonderful evening. It just goes so quickly, doesn't it?
I know. I never know what to say at the end. I'm just sad to see it go.
You can find more of the complete podcasts on Joy website, www.joy.org.au, or download them for free from the iTunes store.
You've been listening to A Little Pot of Joy, the podcast program. See joy.org.au and click on our podcast link to subscribe to your favourite podcasts free.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.